week we began our series in the book of Exodus, and we started looking at last week our slavery to the things of this world. And it's always been God's desire to free us, each and every one of us, from whatever bondage it is that we're under. And He wants to bring us to our true home. Remember, this world that we live in, the nice place that you live in, this is not your home. This is not your temporary, this is not your permanent residence. This is a temporary residence. And the Lord wants us to bring us to our true and future home. And as is always the case, when God begins a work, when He begins a work, He starts to look for a vessel, a proper vessel, to carry out His plan. And in the previous chapters in Exodus, what we looked at last week, we see God starting to prepare a vessel for His use. Remember, we looked at Moses briefly, how Moses saw that the things of this world were not worth living for. Right? He saw what the Egyptians had offered him as passing pleasures of sin, and he had his eyes fixed on the eternal. And Moses, his name is an Egyptian name. It means saved from the water. And he was raised in Pharaoh's household as a son of the daughter of Pharaoh. And so when you look at Moses, and when you look at his life growing up, from man's perspective, right, from the world's perspective, this is the perfect training for Moses to lead the Israelites. Right? He receives royal education and upbringing. He's raised as a prince. Right? He's raised to be a leader one day. And we know he's strong. We know that Moses is strong. How do we know he's strong? Remember, he went out one day. He saw there was a conflict between an Egyptian taskmaster and one of the Hebrew brothers, one of his brothers, basically. And Moses became so upset that he ended up beating the Egyptian to death. So he's got some strength. He's not a wimp. Right? So he's got a good education. He's strong. And look, here Moses was protecting one of his own people. Right? He saw an Egyptian oppressing and harassing a Hebrew brother. And so he stepped in and took care of matters. And so he was doing something, in a sense, he was doing something good. Right? Even though he was raised as an Egyptian, I would think at this point he understood already that he was different than the Egyptians. Right? If nothing else, looks in the mirror and he looks different. Right? So I think he understands he has a different heritage. He identifies with the Hebrews, with the Israelites. And so even though he's enjoyed all these Egyptian privileges, he at some level, his heart belongs to his people, not the Egyptians. And so he goes out there to take care of the matter. Right? He says, you can't treat one of my people this way. What good comes out of this? Not much good comes out of it. Right? Turn with me to Exodus chapter 2. We're going to go back to Exodus chapter 2 real quick. In verses 13 to 15, this is what happened. He kills the Egyptian, buries him. The next day, verse 13, when he went on the second day, behold, two Hebrew men were fighting. And he said to the one who did the wrong, why are you striking your companion? So again, he goes out and he sees another fight. And he tries to break it up and he says to the one who was doing the wrong, why are you striking your companion? Verse 14, then he, the one that was being rebuked, he said, who made you a prince and a judge over us? Do you intend to kill me as you killed the Egyptian? So Moses feared and said, surely this thing is known. When Pharaoh heard this matter, he sought to kill Moses. But Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. This is a good reminder, these three short verses. It's a good reminder of what happens when we decide to take matters into our own hands. Right? We're looking back at history, and so we know that God raises Moses to be the leader of the Israelites eventually. We know that. It happened. It's recorded. Moses becomes the leader. And we know that he eventually serves as a judge over the people of Israel. Right? He's got this huge, massive group of people. Conflicts arise, as always does in society, and people would come to him and ask him to settle matters. So he serves as a judge, right? And we know that he was being raised as a prince. So he is a prince, and he's going to be a judge, but look what this Hebrew man says to him when he tries to break up the fight. Who made you a prince and a judge over us? These things that he is and ought to be, it wasn't time yet for him to step in that position. He wasn't yet to be a leader. He wasn't yet to be a judge. And yes, it is in God's plan to make Moses a prince of sorts, as a leader. It is in God's plan to make Moses a judge. But when Moses took matters into his own hands, things don't go the way that he thinks they would. So the Israelite, the Hebrew nation, was not ready to have him as their master. Right? And so what would see happen is, not only are the Israelites not ready to follow Moses, but now Pharaoh wants to kill them. And so in this passage we read, we see Moses, he flees from the land of Egypt. And look, when we read, right, that was three short verses, one short sentence that says Moses fled to the land of Midian. But we need to slow down when we read this. Think about what happened to Moses. He spent all of his life, as he knows, in the land of Egypt. He was raised in the Pharaoh's palace. He's got some prestige, some honor, although he doesn't quite identify with it. But still, this is everything that he knows. This is everything that he knows. And it's easy to read this verse in a sentence and just gloss over what happened. But he lost everything. Everything. And I mean everything. He lost his people, the Israelites that he was beginning to identify with. He lost his heritage, his upbringing in the Pharaoh's palace. He lost power, everything that he had up to that point in his life. He lost it all, and he fled. In that short moment, he fled and he lost everything. And the Bible tells us, in Acts chapter 7, you'll actually see this. The Bible tells us when this happens, Moses was already 40 years old. Most of you are not 40 years old yet, right? But already at this point, if you think of losing everything, that's a lot. Imagine fast forwarding to the day when you're 40, how much of your life you've lived to lose all of that. Right? And so he runs to the land of Midian, the Bible tells us. And this is not a short journey. If you look at the map, I think it's over 200 miles. There's no planes, there's no trains, there's no automobiles. He goes by foot. This is a long journey, so it's not like I'm just going to run to the next town over. He crosses Egypt, and he ends up in the land of Midian. And the Bible tells us that he spends the next 40 years there tending sheep. If you think about it, this is training, right? What happens after these 40 years, if you know what happens next in Moses' life? He ends up leading the Israelites. Right? So God, during these 40 years when he's in the land of Midian, is training Moses to lead by having him lead sheep. Right? We've talked about this before, how sheep are dumb animals. People are dumb animals too. God is saying, Moses, get ready. You're going to have a whole crowd of people who are going to be unhappy with you, who are going to complain, who are going to gripe and grumble. Get ready by tending these sheep. Get used to it. Right? And so, this is training for his next job, and his running with the trouble in Egypt, his running away, his time in Midian, this is all God working to prepare Moses for what he wants Moses to do. And from man's perspective, we can look at it and we can say, you know what, these things are terrible. These are terrible things that happen to him. Losing everything, right? Losing his status, going from a prince to a shepherd, it seems like a demotion, and that's hard life working as a shepherd. But God uses all of this. Now I want to jump now to the meat of the sermon, to when God actually calls Moses to lead the Israelites out of Egypt. And I guess you can say in a way this is kind of like a job interview that Moses is going to. It's a formality because God already knows he's going to lead Moses. But he's still going to talk to Moses and then bring Moses up to speed on what he's going to do. So in summary, God speaks to Moses and tells him, and this is that whole account of the burning bush, we're not going to look at it. But God tells Moses, I have heard the children of Israel, and I have seen the oppression that they suffer. So Moses, Your mission, should you choose to accept, is to go back to the land of Egypt and lead my people. He says, come, come now therefore, and I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. Now, what do you suppose your first reaction would be if you were in Moses' shoes and God called you to this? I don't know about you. My first thought is going to be, you want me to go back to Egypt? Seriously? I'm a wanted man there. They've got my face plastered all over the pyramids. Everywhere I look, wanted for murder. Moses, son of the daughter of Pharaoh. But they probably left that out. They don't want to associate him with Pharaoh anymore. But you're a wanted man. God, what are you doing sending me back to this place? You know? But look at how Moses responds to God's call. This is the meat of what we're looking at this morning. Exodus chapter 3, verses 11 to 12. So God tells Moses, I am going to send you to Egypt, to Pharaoh. And Moses said to God, verse 11, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? Who am I that I should be, that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? So God replies, I will certainly be with you, and this shall be a sign to you that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain. Now, Moses right now is talking to God. He's talking to God whose presence is there at the burning bush. They're on a mountain. Do you know what mountain they're on? They're on Mount Sinai. And we know that after we come out of Egypt, that God meets with Moses on Mount Sinai and Moses worships there. So God says, I am sending you, and when this is all done, right, God says this will be done, and when it's all done, you will know it when you're standing on this mountain worshiping again. But here's Moses. Moses, he asked, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? Who am I? And God's response to Moses has nothing to do with Moses' question. Did you see that? Moses says, who am I? Look at me. I'm nothing but a shepherd. I've lost everything. Who am I that I would be the one to go to Pharaoh? And God's answer absolutely does not address who Moses is. God says, what? I will be with you. I will certainly be with you, in case you were wondering. Right? Moses, it doesn't matter who you are. What matters is that I am with you, is God's message to him. Right? And look, when a lot of times when we are called by the Lord for whatever it is he's calling us to, we feel unsure of ourselves. And I think it's natural to feel unsure of ourselves. In a way, I think if you feel like you're ready to serve, maybe you shouldn't be serving yet. So I think it's natural to be unsure of ourselves. But how do we address that uncertainty? God does not reply to Moses and say, Moses, don't you remember your qualifications? Don't you remember those 40 years you spent in Egypt and the education that you had? Don't you know, Moses, that you are actually a true Israelite by blood? And so look, man, you've got the best of both worlds. You're an Israelite by blood, and you've got all this good worldly education and prestige, and so you're the perfect vessel for going to lead my people. God doesn't convince Moses by telling him how good he is. And many times when we are called, our focus is on, who am I? Lord, tell me, say some nice things, tell me how good I am and why I should be the one to take this on. But God says it has nothing to do with you. All that you need to take this on, and this is a hard mission. We see later that it is a hard mission. Not today, we'll see in the coming weeks. This is a hard mission that Moses is being called to, dealing with Pharaoh. God says, nothing to do with you, Moses, not to put you down. And God doesn't say this in a mean way. Right? Sometimes we hear that. What does it matter? It doesn't matter about you. And we get all offended. What do you mean it doesn't matter about me? It's all about me. Right? That's how we live many times. God says, as long as I go with you, and that's all that matters. And God has a funny way of confirming. that he will be with Moses. A lot of times we want confirmation beforehand. God, before you send me out, show me a sign that what you are sending me out on is going to be successful. I don't want to take on this call, this mission call, unless I know that things are going to turn out well. God doesn't work this way. God says, I'm calling you, Moses, and I will be with you, and you will know that I am with you when you are done. When you are done and you are back here on this mountain to worship me, then you will know that I am with you. Right? Notice, I'm not switching the tense. I'm not saying, when you are done, you will know I was with you. Because a lot of times we get to there and then we look back and we realize, oh, God was with us. God says, no, I am with you. You need to keep that thought in your head. Even when you haven't seen the result yet, right? God with us is not something that we see once we get to the end and look back. It's something we need to see now that he is with us in the present tense. And that's all that matters. God himself is our guarantee. God himself is our guarantee. What more do you need to know that this mission will be a success? God says, I'm with you. That's all you need. So then Moses hears this and he responds next. Verse 13. Then Moses said to God, indeed, when I come to the children of Israel and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they say to me, what is his name? What shall I say to them? What shall I say to them when they ask me, what is his name? And God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, thus you shall say to the children of Israel, I am has sent me to you. I am. God says, the name that you will use when you tell the children of Israel about me is that my name is I am. Now, grammatically speaking, you look at this and what kind of name is I am? Right? God says, I am who I am. I am this. It doesn't make sense to us, but if you think about what God is saying, first of all, when God answers Moses, if you look backtrack, look at Moses' heart, God says to Moses, it doesn't matter who you are. All that matters is that I am with you. And Moses' answer is, okay, then who are you? Who are you? And look at God's response. I am who I am. This phrase, when you ask God to define himself, is there anything on earth in existence that God can use to compare to himself that could possibly describe who God is? There is nothing, because everything that we know is created by God. You don't use the created to bring it to equal with the Creator. God, when he says, I am who I am, what is he saying? He's saying, there is nothing else like me. There is absolutely nothing else that can compare to me. I am who I am. I am separate from all of this. I made this. I am outside of this. I am greater than all of this. I am who I am. That's me. I am God. I am God. It doesn't matter who you are, Moses. All that matters is that I go with you. Well, then who are you, God? I am. I'm the one who made all this. I am the one who is above all this. And God goes on to say, moreover, in verse 15, moreover, God said to Moses, thus you shall say to the children of Israel, the Lord God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and this is my memorial to all the generations. The Lord God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, God of Isaac, God of Jacob. Just in case you guys have forgotten where you came from. Just in case you forgot. Your patriarchs, that three generations, these faithful men, I am their God, and I continue to be your God. Okay, so God gives Moses a great answer to bring back to the children of Israel. Next chapter, chapter 4, verse 1. So how does Moses is an interesting guy. He's got a lot of comebacks. Chapter 4, verse 1. Then Moses answered and said, but suppose they will not believe me or listen to my voice. Suppose they say the Lord has not appeared to you. Okay, so you say you're God, you are who you are, but what if I come to them and what if when I talk to them your name is not enough? Or maybe they won't believe me. Maybe they won't believe me. And this is something I run into many times, where God says, speak this word. God says, approach this person, say this or say that. And in my mind, my question is, what if they don't believe me? Right? And I have doubt. What if they don't believe me? Now, what do you see is wrong with questioning that way? What if they don't believe me? Yeah, again, all the attention is on me. What I should worry about is whether or not they believe God, because God is the one who is speaking. I'm just a microphone. If you think of a microphone and a speaker, right? Imagine today, if I come here, no, you don't have to imagine, it's happening now. If I am speaking to you, I am giving you a word, and I use a microphone and speaker to get the word across to you. This part you need to imagine. Imagine if the microphone says, oh, but what if Michael doesn't believe me? You're just a microphone. Yes, the microphone is important. Without this, there is no sound. Well, I can speak louder. But the point is, the microphone is a tool. It's a vessel. It is part of the chain through which the word is given. But who are you believing? Well, first of all, you're listening to me, but I'm speaking God's word, right? We are all part of the chain. It all comes back to God. The question should not be, what if they don't believe me? Because I am just a tool. I am just a cup carrying God's message. The question would be, what if they don't believe you? Well, then that's between them and God. What if they don't believe me? And we see, and later on in the chapter, God shows Moses, I will perform miracles through you. Right? But again, there's a trend here to Moses and his line of thinking. Did you notice? What if they don't believe me? I need more proof. I it's all about me. Right? Next, verse 10. If you go back and read, God tells Moses, pick up your rod, put it down, the rod turns into a snake. The miracles happen right there. And that's still not enough for Moses. Verse 10, Moses then said to the Lord, oh my Lord, I am not eloquent, neither before nor since you have spoken to your servant. But I am slow of speech and slow of tongue. Right? Moses actually is very detailed. I am not eloquent. I was not eloquent before you called me to this. And since you have called me to this, since we have been here talking, nothing has changed. My speech has not become faster. I have not become more eloquent. Right? Moses is paying attention because he's thinking, God, if you called me, okay, maybe before I couldn't speak well. But once you call me, you better equip me. And I'm expecting my mouth to start working faster. Right? And you know, I can't think fast enough. This is something I understand about myself. I cannot think fast enough. And so in many ways, I can see what Moses is saying here. You want me? You want me to speak on your behalf? I'm not quick. And when the thoughts are there, when I have prepared the thoughts, and I spend time to prepare the thoughts, even when the thoughts are prepared, sometimes my mouth doesn't quite work the way I want it to. You know, English, for me, English is my third language. And I've become very terrible at my first two languages, so I can't really speak that well in any language. And I can say to God, pick someone else. Why me? Because I have all these deficits. I have all these issues. I can't speak quickly enough. I can't think quickly enough. God, I am not enough. And so verse 11, the Lord said to Moses, who has made man's mouth? Who made man's mouth? Or who makes the mute, the deaf, the seeing, or the blind? Have not I the Lord? Now, therefore, go, and I will be with your mouth and teach you what you shall say. Moses says, I can't. God says, just go and teach you what to say. I made your mouth. Do you not think I can make your mouth work when I need it to? Moses, stop being so focused on yourself. Stop looking at whatever you're lacking, Moses. Whatever you're lacking, whatever is not enough, I will supply. Did I not say that I will certainly be with you? If I am with you, what would you lack? I don't know. I don't know if your response to God is ever, you know, I'm just not good enough. When God calls you to serve Him, I'm not good enough. I need to grow more. My attitude needs adjusting. The Lord is enough. He made you. He's meeting you. He will fix you. He will fix you. That's His promise. That's His guarantee. Moses, bless his heart. Verse 13. After all of this, can someone read the first part of verse 13 when Moses responds?
When he said, "Oh my Lord," he said by the hand of whomever else.
Please, God, who am I? It doesn't matter. I'm going with you. Who are you? I am God. I am enough. I can't speak well. I'll help you to speak. Okay, fine. Pick someone else. Pick someone else. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe Moses got comfortable spending those 40 years tending sheep in the wild. Maybe he started to enjoy it. You know, he's got a wife and kids now. Never mind that those 40 years God was using to train Moses to go lead the people of Israel. And so, yeah, maybe Moses just got comfortable and doesn't feel inclined to change his environment again. I fled from Egypt. I didn't just get out of there. I got out of there 40 years ago. I've got a life here now. Things are going well. Look at all the sheep I have. You want me to leave all this and go back? Again, you want me to get up and put everything behind? Pick someone else. You know, again and again we see Moses pushing back against God. And he's just way, way too self-centered. And when we look at Moses, a lot of times we look at Moses as a great man. And he is a great man. He is. Do not think that I am disparaging Moses. He is a great man. Otherwise, God would not have used him. He was a very worthy vessel in God's hands. But if you look at this exchange here, Moses and God, again and again, Moses is pushing back against God. Why'd you pick me? Who am I? I sent you. Well, who are you? Right? Again and again, Moses is pushing back, I, and he's so absorbed with himself, and he rejects God again and again. And so, verse 14, bring it closer so I can see clearly, I don't read this wrong. Verse 14, the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses. God had enough. I think God's been very patient. God had enough with Moses. God's anger was kindled. You know, I pray for all of us. I pray for all of us that we don't kindle God's anger. I think now it's not so much about His anger. What I worry more about is disappointing God. He looks at me and He looks at you. He looks at each and every one of us. And He has something in His heart that He desires from us. Some way, somehow, that we can serve His kingdom. I don't know what all our roles are. That's for you to find out with God. Perhaps He's already called. Perhaps He's already issued a command, and our response has been, I'm not ready. Our response has been, my heart just isn't right yet. Our response may be, maybe in a year, when I've finally taken care of what I want to take care of here in this world. You know, I have shared this before. One of my managers, when I was in my early years of work, he was a brother, he was a Christian, and I remember one of his encouragements to me was, work hard, Jason, work hard as an engineer. Work hard, save up, so that one day when you're old, you can serve the Lord well. And I remember thinking, why do I want to give the best of my years to the world? And then when I'm old and tired, then I'll bring what's left over to God. Shouldn't it be that we bring our best to God first? Right? And many times our response is, God, okay, you're calling me. I love you, God, and I want to serve you. Just let me finish what I'm doing here. Let me get my career stable. Let me find a spouse. I don't know what your let me is, but many times you push back and say, just wait, God. I want to do it. I really want to do it. As a father to kids, I hear this a lot. Can you do this? Okay, when I'm done with this. Can you take care of that? Okay, when I'm finished doing this, right? There's always a when I'm done, when I'm ready. And God says, if I'm calling you now, then you are ready now. I would not call you if you were not ready. And whatever readiness you still need, God says, I am all sufficient. I will take care of it. You know, when the Lord calls, I pray for all of us. When the Lord calls, and perhaps He's been called. When the Lord calls us, I pray that we're not too focused on ourselves. When the Lord calls us, I pray that we're not making excuses. And excuses are plenty we have. There's a lot of things we can say to God about why we're not capable, we're not ready. When the Lord calls, do what little boy Samuel did. If you remember, little boy Samuel, God called him in the middle of the night, Samuel, Samuel. And twice he ran back to his teacher Eli, thinking that it was Eli calling him. After the second time, Eli said, that's God calling you, Samuel. When God calls you again, answer him this. And this is what Samuel said. When God again says, Samuel, Samuel, what does Samuel say? Speak, for your servant hears. Right? Don't push back. When God calls, say, speak, for your servant hears. That's step one. Speak, for your servant hears. Listen to what God is saying. What is step two? Jesus says, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken him to a wise man. Speak, for your servant hears. When I hear the words of the Lord, then I do them. Very simple. Don't be bold. Okay. Be Moses in that you would go ahead and end up leading the people of Israel. But don't be Moses in these two chapters, wrestling with God and telling him that you're not good enough. Just want to come back to the beginning of the conversation when God said to Moses, I will certainly be with you, and this shall be a sign to you that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, this is always the way that God calls. When he calls with a promise of when it is done. God doesn't say, if it is done, then you will know. God says, when it is done. And so, when we hear the call of the Lord, I pray we answer him with the assurance, with the absolute assurance that when God calls, he will make it happen, should we choose to accept the mission. Let's bow our heads to pray. Jesus, I thank you that that each of us here has been called to salvation, and that each of us here has answered that call and has been saved. But Lord, you do continue to call. You call us not just to salvation, but you call us, Lord, to take action, to go out into this world, to preach the gospel, to make disciples of all nations. And sometimes that call starts with a very, very small step. Most times it starts with a small step, but Lord, help us. Help us to not be like Moses when he was called. Help us to not wrestle with you, and to talk back to you, and to reject you, and to say no. Help us to have the wherewithal when you call us to say, speak, Lord, your servant is listening. And when we hear, to take action and to act on your word. Help us, Lord. Help us to live our life for you. I pray this in Jesus' name. We're going to continue this morning with